All right, getting ready for that Lex Plug narration. Today's deep dive, it's State v. Alston out of the North Carolina Supreme Court. And your listeners, lawyers, and law students, they'll want the ins and outs of this one. Consent, force, intent. The whole mess gets tangled up, especially when there's a past relationship involved.
You hit the nail on the head. It really makes you think, you know. How do you apply those concepts when things aren't so black and white, especially when there's a history between the people involved?
Exactly. So picture this for our listeners. Edward Alston and Cottie Brown, they were together 6 months.
Not exactly a fairy tale, though, right? Consensual intimacy, sure, but also some instances of violence in the mix.
Yeah, that's what makes this case so interesting, legally speaking. I mean, how do you sort out consent from coercion when you've got that kind of pre-existing dynamic?
And things came to a head May 15th. Big fight. Brown says, I'm done. Leaves the relationship. End of story, you'd think. Well, not quite. A month later, June 15th, another incident. This time it leads to Alston being charged with kidnapping and second-degree rape. And that's where the Supreme Court's decision comes in. That's what makes this case so important.
Okay, so June 15th, what went down?
Alston confronts Brown at school, takes her to a friend's house, and things escalate to sexual intercourse. Brown reports it to the police right after.
Sounds pretty open and shut. But we both know, the law, it rarely is. What's the twist here that our narrator needs to get across?
Oh, there's a big one. Get this. The North Carolina Supreme Court, they actually reversed both Alston's convictions. Might raise some eyebrows with our listeners for sure, so we gotta dive into the court's thinking here.
All right, let's start with the kidnapping charge. What were the main points of contention there?
Intent, that's where it all hinged. To be kidnapping, right, the intent to commit a felony, in this case rape, it has to be there when Alston took Brown from school. Prosecution said, hey, look at his actions, that's intent right there. But the court, they weren't buying it.
So, even though they ended up at the friend's house, had sex, the court's saying Alston didn't decide to rape Brown until after they left the school.
That's it. They said the evidence just didn't add up to Alston having that intent back at the school. The timing was crucial. And based on what they saw, they decided, you know, the intent probably came later. And they made it crystal clear in their decision, even included a specific line about it.
Our narrator's going to want that quote for sure. What did they say exactly?
Straight from the court's decision, intent must exist when the removal occurs. Basically, the prosecution couldn't just say, well, this happened at the friend's house, so he must have intended it all along. They needed to prove what was in Alston's head back at the school, and they simply couldn't.
Wow, that's a fascinating distinction. The focus on when the intent formed adds a whole other level to these kinds of cases.
You said it. Intent, it isn't always cut and dry. It can change over time. Lots of factors can influence it.
Right. Okay, so kidnapping overturned, no proven intent at the initial removal. What about the second-degree rape charge? But before we get into that, maybe a quick refresher for our listeners on what exactly North Carolina law requires to prove second-degree rape.
Sure thing. Two main things they got to prove in North Carolina. One, the sex. It wasn't consensual, obviously. Two, there was force or threats, something to overpower the victim's will. That's key.
Got it. So how'd the court apply those elements to Alston?
Here's where it gets really interesting. The court, they said, okay, Brown's testimony, it definitely shows she didn't consent on June 15th. So no consent. That part seems pretty clear. But then that second element, the force, that's where the whole prior relationship thing throws a wrench in the works.
Yeah, I can see that. Prosecution probably tried to argue that the history of violence, it created this climate of fear for Brown. And that fear basically acted as a kind of force, right?
You got it. They leaned hard on those past incidents, saying, look, Brown was probably scared because of what happened before, so she wasn't really free to say no. But the court, they drew a line in the sand there. They said, fear, sure, it comes from that past violence, makes sense. But just feeling afraid, legally speaking, that ain't the same as actual force when it comes to proving a rape.
So even though Alston had been violent with Brown before, the court said that doesn't automatically mean he used force on June 15th. The force, it had to be specifically part of that incident, not just a feeling based on their history. Man, this is exactly why lawyers got to know this case inside and out.
Absolutely. The force, the court said, it's got to be tied to that specific sexual act, not just stuff that happened before. They were really clear about that. And they even used some strong language in their decision to drive the point home.
I bet our narrator will want to quote that part. You remember how it was worded?
Yeah, it was pretty powerful. Force must relate to the specific sexual act, not prior conduct. That's what they said. Basically, prosecutors can't just point to the past and say, see, he's done it before, so he must have done it again. Gotta have evidence for this specific incident.
Okay, makes sense. But I imagine proving no consent, that gets extra tough when there's already a sexual history between the people involved, right?
Yeah.
Not as simple as with strangers.
No doubt. The court knew that too. They put a lot of weight on what they called clear and unequivocal communication from Brown about not wanting to have sex. Because they had been intimate before, consensually, the court said, when she changed her mind, it had to be super obvious. Couldn't just be implied or assumed based on the past.
Wow. Clear and unequivocal. That's a high bar to clear. I mean, think about it. In that kind of situation, full of tension, maybe even fear, it must be so hard for someone to always be that perfectly clear about not wanting to have sex.
Exactly. And that's a really important point. The Alston case, it shows how tricky it is for courts to find that balance. They want to protect victims, make sure they're heard, but they also got to be fair to the defendant, make sure someone's not convicted just because of what they did before or because things weren't perfectly clear in the moment.
So let me get this straight.
Mm-hmm.
Even if someone said no before, that doesn't mean every single time after that is automatically non-consensual. There's got to be that clear communication every time, especially if they've had a relationship. This must have sparked some debate in the legal world.
Oh, absolutely. Alston, it got people talking, that's for sure. It really brought those tricky questions to the surface.
Mm.
How do we prove consent when it's not between strangers? What about when there's a past, good and bad? Some people said, hey, the court's making it too hard for victims. Others said, no, this protects the rights of the accused. It's important. It really forces us to look at how the law deals with consent and coercion and all the gray areas in between, especially in these messy situations.
So for our narrator, for other lawyers out there dealing with cases like this, what are the big takeaways from Alston? What do they need to keep in mind, especially if they're going to trial?
I'd say for prosecutors, the biggest lesson is be meticulous. Gather every piece of evidence you can, especially stuff that directly proves the elements of the crime. Like with force and lack of consent, gotta have more than just a feeling.
What kind of evidence are we talking about? Give us some examples.
Think about it. If there were threats, get those documented. Any signs the victim fought back, that's important. Or if they said no outright, anything to show they didn't want it and the defendant knew it. Can't just rely on the past or that general sense of fear.
So Alston, it's like it set a new standard, right? Prosecutors got to bring their A game, build a case that's rock solid, not just based on assumptions or what happened before.
You got it. State v. Alston, it raised the bar, no question. Clear, undeniable evidence, that's what it takes. Especially when there's history between the people involved. Can't be wishy-washy about it.
Yeah, it really makes you think, you know.
Yeah.
One case, and it sets off this whole chain reaction, not just how these cases go to trial, but even how we think about consent, coercion, the whole relationship thing, how that plays out in the eyes of the law.
Oh, for sure. State v. Alston, it really opened up a can of worms, you could say. Made people realize, hey, maybe we need to be clearer about this stuff. How do we define consent? How do we prove it in court? Especially when there's that past relationship factor, maybe we need to rethink some things, tighten up the laws, you know.
I think our narrator is going to have a killer episode on their hands.
Yeah.
They've got all the facts now, the court's logic, all those little details that make this case so tricky.
Yeah, they're all set. I bet this episode will get some folks talking, especially those criminal law types. It's the kind of case that makes you question things, you know, makes you realize the law, it's not always so straightforward.
You know what I'm curious about? Alston, it was a while back now. Do you think it might have actually changed the laws in North Carolina? Like, did they update how they define consent because of this case?
That's a good question. Hard to say for sure, but I wouldn't be surprised. Alston definitely pointed out some weak spots, right? Like, how do you really prove consent? What about those gray areas with past relationships? It's very possible lawmakers took notice and said, okay, maybe we need to fix this. Maybe they made the guidelines clearer, made it harder to get away with stuff. Who knows?
So Alston, even though it's just one case, it maybe changed how the whole system works, how we deal with these really tough, sensitive issues, how we think about consent.
That's a good way to put it. It's a landmark case, that's for sure. Not just because of the decision itself, but because it got people talking, got them thinking, maybe even got the ball rolling on some real changes in the law. It reminds us, you know, the law, it's not static. Cases like this, they can be turning points, moments where things really shift.
Well, I think our narrator's got everything they need now to put together a fantastic LexPlug episode. And hopefully more than that, they've learned something too. About consent, force, all those complexities of criminal law.
It's been great breaking this down with you. Really interesting stuff. always makes you think.
Couldn't agree more. Until next time, keep those legal brains working.